RCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. Pope Francis, dead at the age of 88. He has been the head of the Catholic Church since March of 2013, when he was elected to replace Pope Benedict, and was the first pope born outside of Europe since the 8th century, the first ever from Latin America. ABC's Marcus Moore was just at the Vatican on Easter Sunday when Francis made an appearance.
Leading up to Easter Sunday Mass and Holy Week, there had been so many questions about whether the Pope would be able to participate because he had been so ill. He spent 5 weeks at Rome's Gemelli Hospital receiving treatment for pneumonia in both of his lungs. And everything that we have learned since is that it was so serious that for a time, doctors there remained guarded about his prognosis.
The Pope had just met with Vice President J.D. Vance on Easter Sunday. Vance saying, "I was happy to see him, though he was obviously ill." This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Thunderstorms producing large hail reportedly caused extensive property damage across southern Wisconsin. Consumers whose vehicles were damaged will likely seek out repair contractors, but they should practice caution while doing so. Many vehicle owners may be in need of an auto body shop for hail damage repairs. Consumers seeking repairs to their motor vehicle should work with their insurance company to select the repair shop if the work will be covered by insurance. Ask for recommendations from friends, family, and other people they trust. Search for online reviews of the company and contact DATCAP's Bureau of Consumer Protection to check if a specific shop has a record of complaints. Document all communications, transactions, and experiences, including dates, times, expenses, and the names of shop staff. Unauthorized repairs or price increases after the consumer received an estimate or quote are not allowed. A shop may hold a vehicle until the consumer pays for repairs that were authorized, but cannot keep it if the consumer refuses to pay for unauthorized repairs. After work is complete, the shop must provide an invoice describing all repairs, replaced parts, and their cost and labor charges. The man accused in the abduction of a pregnant Wisconsin teenager had his initial appearance Thursday in Dodge County Court. Court Commissioner Stephen Symes set bail for 40-year-old Gary Day at $2 million cash. Symes said Day presents an extreme flight risk and an extreme risk to this victim and other potential victims. Day is charged with child enticement and child abduction for allegedly taking 17-year-old Sophia Franklin from her Beaver Dam home in early February. He's the father of the teen's unborn child. Day, arrested earlier this month at an Omaha truck stop, also faces federal charges in his home state of Arkansas. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers clobber the A's. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers had a season-high 16 hits on the way to a 14-1 win over the A's. Milwaukee stole 9 bases in the game, 6 of them in just one inning. Both franchise records. The Brewers' Sal Frelick.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that every team and every catcher thinks that. Like, whether we're stealing or not, just being at first base or second base, the pitcher and catcher thinking about you is a success.
Manager Pat Murphy.
I think that's one of the ways we win. You know, we win by collecting hits, taking walks, stealing bases, having the threat to steal, which gives you a better pitch to hit sometimes. That's one of the ways we can beat you.
The Crew in San Fran tonight against the Giants. NBA, Bucks getting ready for game 2 tomorrow night after losing 117-98 Saturday to the Pacers.
I think we were late. We didn't have enough urgency. Going to game 2, hopefully we can improve that or we can change that. We'll see. But going to game 2, we're going to be better.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Still battling a brutal wind today, gusting up to 30 to 40 miles per hour under mostly cloudy skies. High temperatures stay mild though, scraping the low 50s before we warm things up to about the mid-60s tomorrow. But chances of scattered showers and some thunderstorms. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 42.
reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
When we got our home appraised, we felt robbed. Compared to a similar home right around the corner, our appraisal was $80,000 less.
Latino and Black homeowners are about twice as likely as white homeowners to get low appraisals. If you believe your home has been unfairly appraised because of race or national origin, contact HUD at hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Everyone has a right to fair housing. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll review the weekend news. And Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media Sports Director, will be here to talk about changes coming to the WIAA. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 10:30 news, Mr. Global, Matt Randolph, will be here. He is an oil and gas industry expert. Many things to talk about with Mr. Global, including energy prices and prices at the pump.
Mm-hmm. Which we've had many discussions about.
Many, many. So Matt Randolph will be joining us after the 10:30 news. If you have a question for him,
yes,
please send it in to janesays@civicmedia.us. J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S. Jane Says at civicmedia.us. The same for our guest in hour number two, Colleen McCarthy, who's VP of Organ and Tissue Donation for Versity Wisconsin, is going to be joining us to talk about organ donation.
Yep. She came through sometime last year with both a recipient and a donor.
Yes.
The mother of a donor and a recipient.
So impactful. Yeah. So impactful.
And they were here to answer questions, especially Colleen was here to answer questions as far as, you know, when, where, how.
Who?
Just please give us those questions. We want to be able to answer them for you because we know it's a scary topic, a little intimidating for some, but Colleen is here to help.
Absolutely. And then we will lighten things up in hour number two, starting at 11:30 with a segment we now call Audio Sorbet. Little delayed sorbet there. We're going to talk about lyrics that we get wrong.
Yeah.
Song lyrics that we have gotten wrong over the years. You just hear it wrong, but you can't help but sing it that way.
Yeah.
And there's so many.
And you never tell anybody they're wrong, because if you tell people, then you're like embarrassed for the rest of your life.
Well, unless you get caught by singing along and saying the wrong thing. So that's coming up at 11:30, and we will wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Sand Between Your Toes edition. Great Lakes are involved, and there's a video element as well, so stick around for that. Did want to start off this morning, though, with acknowledging the passing of Pope Francis, who has died at the age of 88. He did make a surprise appearance yesterday for Easter services in Rome. He also met with Vice President J.D. Vance yesterday, but the Vatican announced about 7:35 this morning that Pope Francis had died. Of course, accolades pouring in from all over the world.
Yeah.
If you would like to share any memories you have of Pope Francis, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Of course, I immediately thought of the movie Conclave.
Yeah.
After the news broke, because that will be happening now once the Pope is laid to rest.
Yes.
And they will go into a conclave to select the new Pope, which can be a very long process.
Yes, it can be.
And not everyone was necessarily a big fan of Pope Francis.
No, he was a both a transformative and a lightning rod of a figure inside and outside the Catholic Church. And, you know, I'm a kid who was brought up Catholic, went to Catholic school, Catholic tradition, all the sacraments that I could possibly get to the point I left. And I was a Catholic youth minister, and we always had Pope John Paul. And Pope John Paul II was fine.
Yeah.
He was charismatic.
Very much so.
But Pope Francis was something different. He, I mean, you can say a lot of things about him, about the Catholic Church, about his views, but you cannot deny that his word and his rhetoric definitely kind of went more with the idea of Jesus and helping and being of service.
Being of service.
Yeah.
Welcoming the less fortunate. Yes. All of those things. In 2013, Pope Francis became the first Latin American and the first Jesuit pope. Mm-hmm. He chose his papal name to honor St. Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of the poor, a name he strove to embody throughout his papacy. Apparently, one of the first and kind of shocking things that he did after he was selected as pope, and then you go out onto the big balcony in Rome, and he didn't wear the big red cape.
No.
And that was a big break with tradition.
If I'm not mistaken, also, he shunned a lot of the trappings of the pope. Like, I guess there are, like, custom-made, I think they're Gucci shoes or Versace shoes.
Yes.
That they're made for the pope, and he didn't want to. He wanted to keep his look, his ideas as just about service, about helping, about being of the people. He tried his darndest to be of the people, which, you know, is very, very admirable, especially in this time of our of world leadership.
Yes. In 2018, Francis took a small step in reconciliation. This is from TMJ4, apologizing to abuse survivors after defending a Chilean bishop who was accused of ignoring abuse. Later, he apologized to scores of indigenous people in Canada who suffered abuse at Catholic-run schools. He also, and I had forgotten about this, defrocked Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, who was accused of abusing men and children for decades.
Yeah.
Francis also addressed other areas of contention, including the role of women in the church, putting women in more senior roles at the Vatican. And he also made headlines in 2016 after saying the church, quote, should apologize to the person who is gay, whom it has offended, and encourage parents to welcome their LGBTQ children.
That's probably going to be one of Francis's biggest points of his legacy. And it's important to remember, when Francis was Jorge back in South America as a cardinal and archbishop, he was vehemently against gay marriage. He was vehemently against homosexuality. He very much preached the notion of, this is not of God's nature. This is not, you know, and he did something that not a lot of adults do, especially adult men, is he slowly changed his mind over time, and he changed his where his message was going. And yes, there are some things that he defended. He never said abortion is fine. He never said women could become priests. He never said gay couples could get married. He endorsed civil unions. But the progressiveness of Francis in this, in that church, in this country, in this world, is something that will always be remembered. And I struggle with it myself too. There's always things about him and the papacy that I will always have a problem with, but I cannot deny that he came at it with a message of love, inclusivity, acceptance, and trying to, as I said before, spread the message of Jesus, which is, you're all my children.
Yes. It is going to be interesting to see, because he was not widely loved by all Catholics around the world.
No.
Certainly more conservative Catholics had a lot of issues with Francis and some of his messages, particularly about the gay community. And it's also, if I remember correctly, he made it possible for divorced people to take communion.
Yes. And he, and just really quick, the other thing I want to mention, he said that it was okay for trans folks to get baptized in the Catholic Church. He didn't want them to feel that they weren't part of it either. He looked at the world from a modern viewpoint. It's like, you're divorced. That's a shame.
But it's part of life.
But it's part of life. And you shouldn't be locked out of the traditions, especially in a world that's going to church less and less, that are turning their backs to religion because of these really rigid dogmas and it keeps people away. It makes people leave sadly too. Like I know people who have left the Catholic Church, not because they wanted to leave, because they were told to leave.
Because they weren't welcome.
And I think that if we see anything, if we do see a, I really hope this isn't the case, but with the incoming Pope, if we see a going back to a stricter adherence to
dogma,
it's going to seem inconsistent and hypocritical too, because Pope Francis said it was fine. He said it was good. He said I'm allowed. He said I'm welcome. And now you're saying I'm not. What's God's word to me then anyways? Who says that you know anything? You know, it's going to bring a lot of consternation.
It will be interesting. Again, yeah. This will be an interesting process to watch. And I think, again, with the movie Conclave having come out last year,
yeah,
providing a little more insight into fictional, you know, backdoor dealings in the selection of the next pope, I think there's going to be a lot of interest in this. President Donald Trump did comment on his social media platform today. Rest in peace, Pope Francis. May God bless him and all who loved him. Of course, during Trump's first term, Pope Francis said building a border wall was not Christian, at which point Donald Trump called him disgraceful.
Yeah. It's one of those,
that was then.
Well, that's one of those tweets where I'm like, oh, he didn't write that. Someone else wrote that one for him. Because he was too busy writing some of the most poisonous messages he's ever put out on Easter.
Oh, would you like to share part of President Donald Trump's Easter message that he posted yesterday?
For those who don't know, he went to his Truth Social and posted what could only be described as a long screed.
Love and acceptance?
Of love and acceptance here. Oh, wait, no, that's the wrong one. That's from Holy Week. My apologies. Pulled up the wrong one. Here we go. Happy Easter to all, including the radical left. Happy Easter to all, including the radical left lunatics who are fighting and scheming so hard to bring down murders, drug lords, dangerous prisoners, the mentally insane and well-known MS-13 gang members. And I'm going to skip down to some other stuff here. Sleepy Joe Biden purposely allowed millions of criminals to enter our country totally unvetted and unchecked through an open borders policy that will go down in history as the single most calamitous, he didn't write that part, act ever perpetrated upon America. And then finally, and to all those who cheated in the 2020 presidential election.
You lost the election. You lost.
In order to get this highly destructive moron elected, I wish you, with great love, sincerity, and affection, a very happy Easter. Now, I read like one third of that. The rest is just as disgusting and stupid.
Did he mention haters and losers? Because if he didn't, then I guess I'm not part of his blessing and his good wishes.
He must have been told to try new language because
not happy Easter to all the haters and losers.
No, radical left lunatics who are fighting and scheming hard.
That's so much softer. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on. Just about break time here. And when we return, boy, things are moving smoothly at the Department of Defense. All the most competent people, stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Confidence is knowing you're ready to handle whatever comes your way. That's what it feels like to take on your workday with CentOS. They make sure your AEDs are up to date, your fire extinguishers are tested and inspected, your floor mats are cleaned and delivered, and your workwear looks good, feels good, and is freshly laundered with the CentOS Apparel Plus program. So are you ready to take on today? Visit CentOS.com
I'm ready.
And get ready for the workday.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While corrosive democracy news from Washington continued this week, state news ranged from good in Delaware and Mississippi, mixed in North Carolina and Pennsylvania, to downright ugly in New Hampshire. Voting Rights Lab reports the Delaware Senate advanced SB 2 and SB 3, constitutional amendments allowing 10 days of early voting and no-excuse absentee voting. Legislative versions of both bills passed last year, but the Delaware Supreme Court found that the state constitution didn't enable them. The General Assembly must pass them again next year for them to be adopted. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered Mississippi to redraw state Senate districts for DeSoto County, which it found violated the 1965 Voting Rights Act by diluting a majority black section of the county, according to Mississippi Today. State officials in North Carolina found fewer issues among the 5,000 military and overseas voters than the Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin claimed, but the highly questionable post-election review of voter eligibility continues. Pennsylvania Attorney General Dave Sunday appealed a federal court ruling directing county officials to count otherwise eligible mail-in ballots without a date. The New Hampshire Senate advanced SB 213, which would require voters applying by mail for an absentee ballot to enclose a copy of their birth certificate, U.S. passport, or naturalization papers, almost certainly disenfranchising otherwise eligible voters. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I've seen all good people turn their heads each day, so satisfied I'm on my way.
Good morning and welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Box, Sweet Calby on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine, where you can always join us. Call or text, the number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. After the 10:30 news, he is back. Matt Randolph, Mr. Global, should be here waiting for confirmation. I'm pretty sure he'll be here. He showed up a couple of weeks ago when he wasn't scheduled.
He's like, I thought I was supposed to be here, but like, you want to hang out. Day.
But Mr. Global will be here. We're going to talk about energy prices and what that is going to mean for heating and cooling as we head into summertime and we want to start firing up the air conditioning. Mr. Global, Matt Randolph, going to join us after 10:30. And just a reminder, make sure you join Todd Alba today from noon to 2 p.m. before he moves to his new time on Wednesday. We're all moving.
Yep.
Todd will be from 2 to 4 starting on Wednesday. But today at 12:30, Todd will join Civic Media's own Jimmy Cuska. They're going to be talking about potential changes to the WIAA, and then they will have an olfactory edition of What's Worse.
Oh no.
Oh, it should be a good one.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Join Todd today from noon to 2 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network. More just incredible competence and security coming out of the Defense Department. This in Politico today from the headline reads, former Pentagon official warns department's dysfunction could topple Pete Hegseth. John Elliott, the former top Defense Department spokesperson, a big Trump supporter. I just want to clarify this from the outset. A big Trump supporter is the one who has written this opinion piece in Politico. And he says the Pentagon is in total chaos. This after the New York Times reported over the weekend, signal gate number one wasn't enough, where Pete Hegseth was sharing war plans, attack plans with a whole bunch of people, including a journalist.
Who
accidentally got added somehow. That's kind of disappeared a little bit, but now it's back.
Yes, it is.
Because now we find out that he did another signal chat, again, talking about this attack on Yemen that included his wife, his brother, and his personal attorney. What?
I just want to know if the attorney's first message was, hey, Pete, can you call me right now?
Apparently not. Well, this is a personal attorney, not a government attorney.
No, that's what I'm saying. Even a personal attorney would know you should not be doing this.
What is with I have read reports he has taken his wife along to security briefings. Do you remember when Hillary Clinton was trying to do things in the White House and the way she was excoriated by being included on any kind of top-level meetings? But Pete Hegseth just brings his wife to everything. Apparently, he needs a chaperone all the time.
Hillary Clinton is a shrew because she wants it.
That's right.
Pete Hegseth is just a good husband.
He's a good American. And then, over the weekend, this happened late Friday, they fired three top officials on Friday.
Okay.
Accusing them of leaking sensitive information to the media.
What?
I know. I'm just sharing the information. Hegseth has chastised Pentagon officials for how they handled revelations about the original Signal chat and then pointed to other leaks that caused embarrassment. The guy who wrote this.
Yeah.
Was sidelined after he defended the removal of a Jackie Robinson story about diversity in the military. But again, he is a big Trump supporter.
Wait, he defended the removal?
He defended the removal. He's a big Trump supporter. And he is the one who's saying, this is a mess.
Yeah.
This is absolutely a mess. The three fired staff say they do not know why they were terminated. The three say they have not been told what exactly we're being investigated for, if there is an active investigation, or even if there was a real investigation of the leaks to begin with. They charge that unnamed Pentagon officials have slandered their character with baseless attacks on the way out the door. Trump Vance administration's mission to make the Pentagon great again, they all support that, but not one of them mentioned Pete Hegseth.
Of course you don't. Of course you do not. You don't mention the guy up top who's clearly one of the biggest bumbling idiots.
And so not qualified.
I mean, that is that right there. I mean, like when I hear people defend the bona fides, quote unquote, of Pete Hegseth, that's some grade A cult drinking the Kool-Aid type of thing, or flavor aid if you're a historian. The point is like they cannot admit anything of like, nah, he's not the best choice. He's his choice, so whatever. But like, no, he's really, really qualified. He's a guy who knows what he's doing. He's there at the ground level with the troops. No, he's not. He worked for Fox for so many years, and like, he's not the guy. There's got to be a four-star general walking around that building who's like, Trump is amazing. Make him the guy.
Put him in there.
Yeah, but this Pete Hegseth dude who like has no qualifications to barely work in the Pentagon, let alone run it.
Todd from DePeer texting in, listening on WGBW in Green Bay. Relax, Jane. I'm sure Hegseth's wife and personal attorney hacked their way into the chat. Pete probably doesn't even have his wife's phone number on his phone. I don't know that you're wrong, Todd.
People are saying, I don't know.
Many people are saying.
Oh my gosh. But you know what though? And I didn't want there to be another one of these to get back into the, but we shouldn't forget about these things. They should be in our mind at all times that these sorts of actions are happening with the individuals that Trump has personally picked.
Selected, yes. Hand
to
selected.
Run his administration, to run his cabinet. These are the individuals who are just the best people.
Speaking of security and the most competent people, Kristi Noem's purse got stolen over the weekend. She had her passport in there, her keys. $3,000 in cash.
I'm surprised there wasn't a gun in there.
That's a whole nother discussion. Yeah. But we have to move on. News is coming up next. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. Thursday's Wisconsin Elections Commission meeting to review a complaint regarding uncounted ballots in Madison took a heated turn. Commissioner Bob Spindell wanted to talk about Milwaukee over the objections of Commission Chair Ann Jacobs. As Spindell read from a prepared statement, Jacobs repeatedly ruled he was out of order, at one point pounding her gavel and threatening to eject him from the meeting. Spindell, a Republican appointee on the six-member commission, was attempting to bring up the Milwaukee's ballot shortage from the April election, which Jacobs, a Democratic appointee, noted was not on the agenda. In small cities and rural areas that lack child care access, Governor Tony Evers says school districts may be the solution to filling those gaps. Evers says state funding is vital, comparing child care to public infrastructure. Evers has proposed $480 million for child care providers in his state budget. The governor was in Barron on Wednesday, touring the city's new Main Street and promoting clean drinking water initiatives. The Democratic governor also said that migrant workers without legal status are vital to the state's economy and urged the Trump administration to continue federal funding for infrastructure projects in the states. The legislature's Joint Legislative Audit Committee will hold a hearing on Wisconsin DEI audits. Republican committee co-chairs Senator Eric Wimberger and Representative Robert Witke say the hearing will be held next Wednesday at the Capitol. Audits released last week found that state agencies and the universities of Wisconsin failed to track money spent on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. In a statement, Wimberger and Witke say agencies pushing DEI initiatives need to be held accountable. The audit showed that the UW system spent $12.5 million related to salaries and compensation.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The new Star Wars film officially has a title, and it's called Star Wars Starfighter. The film's lead actor will be Ryan Gosling, and it will be directed by Sean Levy, whose previous credits include, well, pretty much everything. Levy has directed the recent smash Deadpool and Wolverine, all three Night at the Museum films, and executive produced Stranger Things. Gosling's last big film was The Fall Guy, so I'm sure he's eager to wash that taste out of his mouth. Star Wars Starfighter hits theaters May 28th of 2027. There is something about podcasts that seems to help celebrities open up. Emilio Estevez recently appeared on the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast. Host Josh Horowitz asked The Outsiders actor what the worst note he ever got from a director was. Estevez says on the set of St. Elmo's Fire, director Joel Schumacher screamed at the top of his lungs, "Have a good bleeping time." Estevez says Schumacher was a bully and wildly insecure. He also made a very mediocre Batman movie. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Still battling a brutal wind today, gusting up to 30 to 40 miles per hour under mostly cloudy skies. High temperatures stay mild, though, scraping the low 50s before we warm things up to about the mid-60s tomorrow. But chances of scattered showers and some thunderstorms. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
It's 43 degrees at our studios.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Anne from Chippewa Falls.
What are Republicans voting for? If they're not voting for Medicare, Medicaid, clean energy, clean water.
Tax cuts for billionaires. You wouldn't get a lot of votes for that. So you have to create an enemy. And somebody says, blame all these people like women and immigrants and black and brown folks. Your brain will sometimes want to accept that because it's the easiest of off ramps to all of the anxiety and existential fear that you've got.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Moving soon to its new time. Weekdays 4 until 6 on Civic Media and on the app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
More than 600 international students and recent grads have had their visas revoked. Here's people that are here 100% legally. We've seen the ICE checklist. Do you wear a Chicago Bulls hoodie? Do you have a tattoo? Check, check, gone. Again, this is about due process and following the Constitution. And if we don't have that, then none of us are safe.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Moving soon to its new time. Weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and on the app.
Earl Ingram.
It's the final episode of the Earl Ingram Show. I want to thank everybody. I'll share on how to stay connected, and then attorney Scott Harris will join me in the studio to share his inspiring story.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings at 9.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same. It's 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It is Monday. We are joined by Mr. Global. Matt Randolph is here. He is an oil and gas industry expert, which is not something you can just get assigned and you don't get to call yourself that. There are actually processes you have to go through and years in the industry you have to go through before you become an oil and gas industry expert. I like to say that, Matt, because there's always someone on the live stream who says, Mr. Global's always wrong. I encourage them to go to your YouTube channel and tell you that you're wrong.
Yeah. They never tell me what I'm wrong about. They just say you're wrong.
Right. They're kind of light on specifics. Just this blanket, Mr. Global is wrong.
Yeah. The last time you were here, someone sent a message just as you were leaving, of course. And I sent it to you. And the whole gist of it was telling us all how easy it is to just start drilling. And you just don't get it. I'm like, okay.
You cool. Just don't get it, Matt.
Maybe they think or mean like conceptually I'm wrong, or maybe it's some more abstract thing we don't know about.
Must be.
Are you even real, man?
Just to clarify, I just do want to clarify for people who may have never heard you on our show before, you do own an oil company, correct? You actually like drill for oil.
Yes. I am an owner of an oil company, yes.
Yes. And you've been doing this a long time.
Yeah, 33 years.
There you go. So. Okay. Yeah. Just again, I just want to get that out in front for anyone who may never have caught you on our program before. Just do a little reset here. And again, Matt has his own channel on YouTube. I highly encourage you to follow him on YouTube. It is eye-opening. You will learn so much. And again, please point out the flaws in Matt's logic. That's the best part of the videos as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
We got to find joy and happiness wherever we can, Matt. That's kind of what it's about. I wanted to start off with a drill, baby, drill. This is what we were promised as Donald Trump was running for president. It was going to be drill, baby, drill, and we're going to be energy independent and everything is great. So where are we right now? Not quite 100 days in. Where are we with the drill, baby, drill crowd?
Well, I don't know where we are with the crowd, but with the drill baby drill thing, it's still not a thing.
It's not a thing.
So, gotcha.
Yeah.
We just write that down. Write that down. Not a thing. All right. Got it.
Yeah.
All right.
We have less drilling rigs now than we did then. So we're losing. Maybe he meant less drill baby drill, but we're certainly not drilling more.
But I thought all of Donald Trump's policies were supposed to enable oil companies to drill more, and therefore, you know, gas is going to come down and the price to heat and cool our homes is all going to come down. So where are we in all of that?
Well, the only thing that enables companies to drill more is higher prices.
If they make more money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. There's nothing else. There's no regulation. There's nothing. There's no good feelings. Just the money, right? They do it for money, and so they got to have the money to do it. And the money's not there because of the trade war. So oil prices have fallen over the trade war, and we're not drilling. Yeah. But we weren't going to drill anyway. Like we told, you know, as soon as Trump got elected, the oil companies came out and told them we're not going to do that.
So. Yeah.
So. Did he not talk to them at all beforehand about what their plans were?
Does it matter?
No.
I mean, would he have listened to them? So, you know, I think the oil and gas industry largely supported Trump because they wanted him to do as much damage as could be done to their competition, which is renewable energy, right? So, you know, the whole EPA, EV, policy, you know, through, you know, more EVs on the road, more renewable energy. That's why they elected Donald Trump. It didn't have anything to do with them wanting to drill more. It's because they wanted to be able to drill longer and longer way out in the future. So, and Donald Trump is delivering to them what they wanted. And they're like, thanks, but we're not going to drill.
Well, and it's, where is the price of a barrel of oil right now?
This morning it's about, man, everything's crashing again this morning because China hit Trump in the mouth. It's about $62 this morning, I think.
But because when we've had you on before and we've talked about this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but once it gets below $60 a barrel, oil companies aren't making any money, and therefore they are not going to do more drilling because it is costing them money.
So, it, you know, you hear about break-even prices a lot. You have break-even prices for new wells, which is the cost to drill and complete a new well. And then you have another break-even price for existing wells that are already producing, right? So really anything below about 70 will put a stop to a lot of new drilling. You can make money with older existing wells that are already producing under 70, but for new drills, which is very critical to the United States, you really need it at about $70. Because, you know, this is 2025 and inflation is a thing. And, you know, the break-even price continues to rise, just like the price of everything else continues to rise.
Is there a price at which even an old rig will you know,
start losing money?
If the price drops to a certain point where they even say, yeah, turn off this set of rigs because it's not even doing anything good for us now.
It's very specific to companies because companies have different structures and contracts in place and different operating costs. You know, there are definitely companies out there that can drill at $60 oil, right? So when we talk about break-even prices, we talk about sort of the average over the whole industry in the United States, because there's other companies that can't even drill at 75. And, you know, so what are their leases like? What's their royalty position on their acreage? Do they have 100% of all the mineral rights, or do they have 80%? All of those things matter. So the issue in the United States is the decline curve on new wells. And what that means is when you first drill a new well, it produces more than it will ever produce initially. And as every day goes by, that production
goes down. Yep.
Every single day. It's the best day is the first day. That's the best day, always will be, right? But in order to just maintain production in the United States, we have to drill probably 7,000 or 8,000 wells a year just to keep oil production exactly the same. So if that number drops to, say, 5,000 as far as new wells drilled, then you're going to see a pretty significant drop in overall oil production in the United States.
If you're just joining us, Matt Randolph is here. He is known as Mr. Global, and we're talking about oil and gas and electricity and heating our homes and all of those things. Jack from Merrimack is on the line. Good morning, Jack. Did you have a question for Matt?
Good morning. Yes, I do. Could he please explain the mineral depletion allowance that the tax break that oil companies get? I'm sure he's taking advantage of it. If I had an oil company, I would be too.
Thanks a lot, Jack. Matt, what do you want to say about that?
So there's a couple of different ones that he's talking about. And so if, let's say you're an oil company and you have 100,000 acres, right? You place a value on the oil and gas, the hydrocarbons that exist within that acreage, right? And that value is placed on the current commodity price. So let's say oil is 70, natural gas is 350. You can say, The hydrocarbons in my acreage is worth however much money. So let's call it $1 billion, right? Well, if the price of oil drops to, say, $60, then you write down, right? That's a loss on your books because you've lost $10 per barrel of value within your acreage, and you can write that off on your taxes. Also, as you pull hydrocarbons out of your acreage, that's called depletion because you're depleting the reservoir. You also get a tax break for that as well.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, it's not illegal, right? You're doing what's allowed, but
yeah, it's just like if you owned a brick and mortar business and the value of that building dropped. Like if the county came in and said, this building that used to be worth $1 million is now worth 700,000, that's a loss in your business. So it's, it's the same way. And, you know, renewable energy has the same thing, right? They depreciate their wind turbines, their solar panels. This is the way to depreciate your actual minerals that exist.
I think it's important too. I want to go back a little bit to the oil companies. Their big motivation in supporting the Trump administration was that the Trump administration wants to kill alternative energies like wind power and solar power. And they just want, they want to keep drilling, and they want, and now we're going back to coal. Apparently clean coal is going to be a thing, which I didn't realize coal can't be clean. But you are not entirely against all forms of alternative power either, even as an oil guy.
No, we need, other than coal, because I don't like coal, but we do need every type of energy we can harness right now. Energy demand around the world is already growing at the fastest, fastest pace ever in history. And regardless of climate change, whether it was a thing or not, we would absolutely need all of this energy just to meet demand in the future.
So we should still be investing in solar. We should still be invest. I know you're not a huge fan of wind turbines because, at least when we've spoken before, you've said that the outlying cost is just not necessarily the ROI isn't necessarily the best.
Well, it's not really about ROI; it's about reliability. I'm a big fan of solar. Solar has huge upside. You know, in 20 years, solar isn't going to look anything like it looks right now. It's going to be crazy, the technology advancements we'll see. But wind, it's more of a reliability issue, and us not having, the thing that will help wind is much better battery storage capability. And you have to have that with wind because it's so intermittent. So when you would, if you could pair really good battery storage with wind, it would be okay. But it's of, you know, you look at oil and gas, nuclear, solar, wind, you know, hydroelectric power. Wind is the least reliable power of all sources of power. And that's my issue with wind. It has nothing to do with the fact that it's renewable. It's that it's the least reliable.
When you talk about improvements in solar, where are those developments going to be coming from? Because it doesn't look like we're going to be investing in that here.
Well, everyone else will be able to enjoy that. But just the efficiency of solar panels, you know, a solar panel's efficiency is very low right now. It uses only a very small amount of the actually energy it absorbs. And when you just double, when you're able to double that, that just puts solar on a whole nother different level. And solar is going to be huge. Everyone is saying it. Everyone knows it. Solar's going, one day solar is going to rule the world when it comes to energy, unless something else like, you know, fusion or something comes in. But yeah, solar's got a huge upside, massive upside.
Will there also be, I mean, investments in like making it smaller, like making the panels smaller and more affordable?
Yes.
Okay.
So you know how the phone used to be this big and now the phone is this big? That's what's going to happen to solar. Instead of an 8x10 solar panel on your house, you know, one day you could literally have a single solar panel on your house that's maybe the size of a tile, like a 1 foot by 1 foot
that's
little
amazing.
Thing that will power your entire house. That is going to happen. And when I say that, people think I'm nuts. And I'm like, no, just think back through history of what technology has given us, right? Yeah. That day is coming. That day is coming. And I think it'll happen in my lifetime. And I'm pretty old, so that says a lot.
We're going to continue our conversation with Matt Randolph, Mr. Global. If you have a question for him, 855-752-4842, or send it in to janesays@civicmedia.us. Stay close. We'll be right back. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Vast, statewide, countrywide. You can pick us up in Venice if you have the app, baby. Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent months, Milwaukee health officials have uncovered significant lead hazards in city schools, mostly due to lead-based paint. Several schools have now been closed as the problem has been found to be more widespread. In late March, city officials formally requested help from the CDC, but in doing so, they learned that the CDC's entire lead program had been eliminated by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This is a major problem. Children in the state's largest city are being exposed to lead poisoning at their schools, and the Trump administration is not only refusing to provide assistance, they are eliminating the entire lead program that would help in cases like this one. Now, state and local officials must step up to do something for these kids, since Trump and RFK Jr. are gutting federal support. Milwaukee's children deserve better.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Day one, the hardest day, the day you hear.
This is a type of blood cancer.
But day one is just one day. At the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, we are here to help you move past day one.
On day 45, I discovered an online community who shared great tips for in-treatment care.
I missed a lot of school during treatment, and LLS helped me keep up.
To learn more and get help on day two, day 28, or any day, please visit lls.org or call 1-800-955-4572.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross, calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. News from the Center, WRCE.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Mock, Calvinator on the board. Coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. After the 11 o'clock news, Colleen McCarthy is going to be in studio along with a couple of guests, and we're going to talk about the importance of organ and tissue donation. And if you are thinking about becoming an organ donor, it's really easy to do. You do it when you get your driver's license renewed, and there's a little dot on there that marks you as an organ donor. But we're going to talk about why it's so important and what an enormous difference you can make for people left behind. So please stick around for that. If you have questions for Colleen, absolutely, you can call in. You can also email it at janesays@civicmedia.us. Right now, though, we're joined by Matt Randolph, who is known as Mr. Global. I highly encourage you to follow him on YouTube. He has his own channel. Matt, we're going to play a little clip from one of your recent videos. Calvin, do you have that clip ready, please? Let's hear from Mr. Global.
We all have our own experience with Donald Trump. Personally, I watched hundreds of businesses and tens of thousands of jobs in my industry disappear because Donald Trump crashed the global oil and gas market. That's in his first administration, okay? I watched that, and then I watched him convince people in the oil and gas industry that he was the best thing ever for them and that we were going to drill, baby, drill. What's happening to those people right now?
Yeah, they're not drilling, baby, drilling. That is not happening. And I think it's important, Matt, again, to reiterate and explain how Donald Trump crashed the market during his first administration, because a lot of people aren't aware of this. So if you wouldn't mind just going back over that.
Yeah, so it was called the Great Crash in 2018. And we see some things happening right now similar to what happened in 2018. Donald Trump convinced OPEC to increase production so he could place sanctions on Iranian oil. And once OPEC increased their production by 1 million barrels a day, Donald Trump granted Iran waivers and allowed them to sell oil again. And that crashed the entire global market. And Yeah, that's the great crash of 2018. We lost over almost 35% of our rig count in 2019 as a result of that. That happened at the end of 2018. There was some talk about the Jamal Khashoggi murder being, you know, a subject of that because, you know, once he got Saudi Arabia to increase production, then basically the United States forgave Saudi Arabia or said Saudi Arabia didn't have MBS specifically, didn't right. have anything to do with the Khashoggi murder. So all that was going on at the same time too. So it's like we traded a life for some cheap gas for a while and cost a lot of people their jobs. That's basically what happened.
Thank you for that. Again, I just think it's important for people to understand how many things are interrelated when we talk about these things as well. Matt, we got about 3 minutes left, and I did want to talk a little bit about we're heading into summertime. People are going to be firing up their air conditioners. Let's talk about the cost of energy and how things – what do you perceive over the next couple of months as far as people's electric bills and things like that?
So if we have a really hot summer, and guess what? It's 2025, so we probably will. It's been a long time since we haven't. People's electric bills are going to be high. They're going to be like they were in this last winter. People were sending me $1,200, $1,400 electric bills, especially in the Northeast Corridor part of the United States, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania. There's a lot of deregulated states up there. That is the worst place in the country, that in California, for electric bills. But we get into the summer and we get really hot temperatures. We're going to experience that again. Whatever you saw this last winter, if you had really high bills, you're going to see that again this summer because we use a ton of natural gas to generate electricity, and natural gas prices have fallen some, but that's because it's spring and we're not using any. Temperatures are very mild. But as soon as we start using more and with more exports, those electric bills are going to skyrocket again this summer.
But Donald Trump promised that we're going to be producing so much energy that I don't know. I mean, I assumed my electric bill was going to be like $10.
He said it would be cut in half. Yeah.
So don't forget the fact that 100% of the oil production increases that we've had since 2016, almost 10 years, 100% of the oil production increase has all been exported. We're not keeping any of it. And the same thing is happening right now with natural gas and natural gas exports. Any production or increase in production with natural gas that we see right now is going to go straight overseas, which means it makes our prices more expensive. It's not cheaper if you don't keep it here and use it, right? And this is why the Biden administration was trying to slow down LNG exports. He came out and specifically said, this is going to be harmful to people's utility bills. Trump come in, you know, wanted to export all the natural gas we can. I'm not opposed to exporting natural gas, but I am opposed to doing it so someone has to pay $1,500 a month for their electricity so some company can make another $1 billion to send it overseas when we can use it here. That's the thing that I'm against.
And we haven't even talked about the effect of tariffs and Canada and all of that. So we will get Mr. Global back on. There's always so much more to cover. There really is. Follow him on YouTube. It's so eye-opening. And please, if you doubt the veracity of Mr. Global's answers, ask him about it. Question him. Yeah. Tell him he's wrong. It always works out so very, very well.
He might make a video about you.
Absolutely. Matt Randolph, Mr. Global, thank you so much, Matt. We'll see you later.
Take care, Matt.
Thanks, guys.
News coming up next. Stay here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee Film Festival Program Director Kirsten Larson and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison discusses their new lineup. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mike Starr joins us here on Nightlight. Your timing, good fellas, Mike. What you just said was an ad-lib to De Niro. He's like, security, and you're like, you're looking at him.
Well, that whole scene was improvised. And wow. He said, make sure you don't call it ad-libbing. It's improvisation. It was quite a process that Martin Scorsese put us through over a few days that it would come out like that. It wasn't just like, hey, how you doing?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump at the annual Easter egg roll at the White House a short time ago, talking about Pope Francis, who died early this morning at the age of 88.
He was a good man, worked hard. He loved the world, and it's an honor to do that.
Firsts for Pope Francis. He was the first Jesuit ever to be Pope and, born in Argentina, with the name Jorge Mario Bergoglio, was the first from Latin America elected to lead the Catholic Church. After his funeral mass and burial, a new Pope will be chosen by cardinals from around the world. This is ABC News contributor Father John Walk in Rome.
The conclaves, which have been around now for, well, since the 13th century, are essentially designed to make sure that the voice of the Holy Spirit is heard while the Pope is being elected.
Pope Francis reached out to the disenfranchised and to the poor and to refugees. This is ABC News.